Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. If you're not a business maverick, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of this podcast. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath not by fighting the giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology, a slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I'm a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and the managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business technology and strategy consulting firm. I'm also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business, a strategy can take it global. Guys, support the show, and you can do that by liking the show, certainly in any podcast app platform you use. You can subscribe to the show, and you can leave a comment. All of those help me. And you can do that in any of the platforms that you enjoy. iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podomatic, all places where you can find the podcast and like, share, and subscribe. Make sure you check us out on Patreon. You can support us there as well. Become a patron of the Guerrillapreneur podcast and help us put a fab lab in the Black Belt South. Guys, today we have a terrific podcast for you. We are talking to the founder and CEO of Redify, Victor Oko. Redify is a platform, both web and mobile, that empowers customer choice and well-being. The Redify platform allows consumers to scan a barcode and find out if toxic ingredients referred to as chemicals of health concerns, or CHCs, are in the products that you're about to purchase. Yeah, that's right. Pick up that can of soup, scan the barcode, and Victor's app will show you if these CHCs are in that product. Now, why is that important? Because CHC exposure is linked to many of the diseases that we get, including cancer, infertility, birth defects, obesity, and more. And unfortunately, manufacturers are not legally required to remove the CHCs from their brands unless you, the consumer, can prove harm. So I traveled down to the Comcast Universal Boomtown Accelerator in Atlanta, Georgia, called The Farm, to meet with Victor Oko and talk to him about his groundbreaking company, Redify Inc., and the Redify app. Here's my interview with Victor Oko, founder of Redify. Exciting podcast for you today. We have the CEO of Redify here with us, Victor Oko. And he's going to tell us all about his company. But before we jump in, we're going to learn a little bit more about this man because he has had an exciting background. Club owner.
Right? Oh, yeah. Back in the day.
Scientist.
Yes.
Professor.
Yes.
And now entrepreneur.
Yes.
That is a path that most people have not lived, a life that most people have not lived.
Oh, yeah.
But you have done it all, and now you're in the midst, in the throes of launching a tech startup in the healthcare space.
Indeed.
But before we dig into that, tell us more about that background.
Well, hello, you know, Guerrillapreneur community. How are you? Nice to be here. Well, you know, my background is a little bit, I won't say weird, but not your regular path. So originally, I'm from Nigeria, and I've been in the country now since 1992, and there's a story behind that, by the way. So when I left Nigeria, right, the understanding was that we're going to Birmingham, England, right? Exactly, because that is what my dad said to us. Okay, you know, I have a twin brother. Says, okay, you guys are going to Birmingham because we got a family in London. So it's like, okay, Birmingham's not too bad, you know, just an hour away from London. So at the airport, when they gave us our package, right, it was Birmingham somewhere in America.
Birmingham, Alabama.
Correct.
I don't think that's like Birmingham in the UK.
Oh, it's very different. So so that's how I came to America. When I came, you know, I came as a, you know, to go to school. So I went to University of Alabama in Birmingham. I love Birmingham, by the way. You know, initially there was a culture shock, right? It's like, okay, new country, you know, in the South. You know, before that, though, I've been coming to America, but not to the South. But I said, okay, new country in the South, quiet. You know, here definitely you can focus on your studies, because which is what my parents wanted. Said, you go to this place, no distraction, historical place, you know, go study. So that is how I came to America. And so when I started with a major of biology and chemistry, right? So, man, I can't believe I was, you know, that's a good old days. So anyway, I started off as an undergraduate. You know, then finished, went through the master's program as well. You know, got a master's in toxicology, again in UAB. And they worked, you know, in UAB, for a while. And around 2002, you know, Florida International University came knocking. They say, hey, you know, you guys are doing this. Then we set up a program in UAB. And they said, we want you guys to come and duplicate this program in FIU. Then my boss, and that happens to be my mentor, said to me, why don't you find somebody to go with me, with him, not, you know, to Miami, since, you know, I don't want to go to Miami. And I looked, you know, in Birmingham, in UAB, to figure out who will go with my boss, relocate to Miami. Nobody. They said to me, how about you? Why don't you follow me to Miami? And I go, huh? Miami? So anyway, so that's how I ended up in Miami. So in Miami, the job we're supposed to do, you know, is to set up the public health program, which is the template for FIU to get a medical school. When you have a medical school, you must have a template. You must have a good public health program. So when they set it up, you know, but the deal he made with me, you know, before I left, was that, you know, you got your master's. If you come with me, you know, you can get your doctorate there while you're working there, doing everything. I said, okay, let's go. So it was a good deal. When I went there, you know, I finished the PhD in 3 years, you know, then I worked in FIU, you know, taught in FIU, you know. But in terms of my entrepreneurial journey, it did not start with this, as you said earlier. It started off actually, well, my parents have always been entrepreneurial. And they wanted us to go back, you know, go to school. But still, though, I still did a lot of things, you know, while I was in school. Like I say, you know, co-owner, a bar / restaurant / nightclub close to the university. Very fun days.
And this was in Birmingham.
Yeah, it was in Birmingham on 20th Street. You know, very close to the university. Very, very, it's two blocks, you know, from the hospital. And good old days, you know, good memories. Great memories, actually. Great memories in Birmingham.
Now, what inspired you? I think the name of the restaurant, yes. Bar, yes. Nightclub, was, yes. Caribbean Queen.
Yes, it was Caribbean Queen Palace.
Okay, Queen,
yes.
Palace.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you saw a need for this, obviously.
Right.
As a student.
Yes.
And launched this business.
Correct.
What was that need? What inspired you? Because not every student launches a business, nightclub /
true.
Bar.
True. I have some friends also too that think like me. They were all students, and you know, in Birmingham is a very homogeneous community, in the sense that they said the same thing. It's the same experience. You go to one bar, to another bar, to another bar, to another bar. It's the same thing, right? There was no something different, and but then there was this community that was coming up, this diverse community. And so right there, we noticed that there's a need, right, to cater to this diverse community. So we said, okay, let's, you know, open up our... Actually, the first thing we did was, you know, we started to rent bar space, you know, for like, you know, Saturday nights, right, and we pack it. Then, of course, the owner of the bar was undercutting us. It's like, okay, no, we can do this ourselves. So we went to look for a spot. It was myself and three other guys. look for that spot very close to the university. Got a chef, you know, and it was nice. So we opened up this bar, had it painted pink, because we wanted to recreate the Caribbean, you know, feel, like the flair, you know. But of course, you can imagine having a club called Caribbean Queen Palace. You know, so people are thinking something else.
So you got a real diverse community by the time you finished painting this club pink and calling it Caribbean Queen Palace.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you were ahead of your time in terms of serving multiple communities.
Yes, yes, yes.
Including communities who wanted to come to the Caribbean Queen Palace. Right.
And Birmingham was the only place Caribbean Queen Palace was the only place you could get jerk chicken. Jerk goat, right?
Right.
Curry, you know, I mean, those Caribbean-like, you know, cuisines. So you can only get it in our place. So you can imagine when the word got out that there's a place, you know, Caribbean Queen Palace. So people didn't really care about the color and the loudness, everything. So they just came there to have a good experience, you know. So that's how I got the bug, you know, to start to do something else, you know, other than academics.
But you have some really cool stories associated with this.
Oh, my goodness.
We don't have to tell them all the secrets. But there was this one very famous athlete that was hanging out in Birmingham around that time, playing for the Birmingham Barons. When he stopped playing basketball, that came to your club frequently, right?
Oh, yes. You know, I'm not going to go into detail. You know, let's just say the place was a popular, you know, hangout, you know, for big name athletes, you know, which I don't really want to go naming names, you know, but we provided this safe space, you know, for them to, you know, have, you know, the space where they can feel relaxed, not feel pressured into sending signatures, you know, so it's like I had their own little spot. Nobody bothers them. They do their own thing. And, you know, I think that was for about a year, you know, before the athlete says, you know what, let me go back to doing something else. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, but, you know, while we had that joint, I met a lot of cool, I won't say just no athletes, celebrities. You know, a lot of very cool celebrities. And some of them that were cool on TV, but when you meet them in person, they're not really that cool, right? They're horrible people. It's like, oh my goodness, you're on TV, you are like this. But in person, but you meet the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? But it was all, for me, it was all good experience, you know, and, so, again, that was a very interesting time of my life.
Right. Yeah. And it set the stage for you now to start thinking about being an entrepreneur. You proceed forward.
Right.
FIU.
Yeah.
Get your PhD. Right. And you are a scientist, a professor in this space where people are thinking about their bodies, their health.
Correct.
Right. How did that lead you back into becoming an entrepreneur in the healthcare space?
Okay, very simple. So, you know, our research interest, you know, at that time was on something called endocrine disruptors, right? And how they, you know, increase the risk for cancers, right? So we're doing that research, you know, there's a bunch of endocrine disruptors. So what an endocrine disruptors, you know, is, in a nutshell, is, you know, estrogen-like chemicals, right, in the environment, including in everyday product, and how these, you know, chemicals over time, you know, increase risk for diseases. So my interest then was how these endocrine disruptors lead to breast cancer or increase the risk, you know, for breast cancer. So that was what we were actually, you know, my research was all about. And so during that time, I had twin girls, and so when my twin girls were like 7, 8 years old, my wife, you know, while we're little, my wife likes to make them look beautiful, you know, take pictures of them, put them in, you know, in competitions. So, but when they were 7 years old, you know, she noticed that something is not right with their bodies. And so she took them to see a pediatrician. And so the doctor said, you know, let me look at, you know, what you use on your kids. So while she was there, the doctor said, oh, this product contains, you know, endocrine disruptors. My wife have always heard me discuss endocrine disruptors from the standpoint of, you know, research. So when the doctor was saying, oh, these are estrogen, so wait a minute, that's what my husband studies. So she called me right there and then. And she said, honey, do you know that endocrine disruptors are in children product? And I was like, what are you talking about? She said, yes, you know, the doctor just, Dr. Goosby just said, you know, phthalates, you know, BHT, BHA, notriclosan, these are all endocrine disruptors. I said, really? Right? She said, yes, you know, and Google, thank God for Google, and I Googled it, and I Googled the product, and I saw all those ingredients that were part of the formulations of children's product. Of course, you can imagine how angry I was, you know? And then also I was working with Karina Villalba, who is my co-founder. And I said, Karina, look, can you imagine that children's product have all these, you know, harmful chemicals that we're researching in the lab, right? Can you imagine what, you know, researching with, you know, for these endocrine disruptors in the lab, how the, you know, little cancer, for it to be in products. And so that was like, whoa, what's going on here? So so that kind of, you know, spurred this, you know, the interest. So the question for us then was, if we scientists, right, did not know that there are endocrine disruptors, right, in products, how can the layman know? Right? It's almost impossible. So it's like the deck is stacked against the consumer. Now, there's another inflection point. So around 2011 or 12, thereabout, you know, I got an opportunity to go to Vermont Law School to go and do a program called Environmental Law and Policy. And so it's like 18 months program. So you spend some time there, you do the rest online. When I was there, it's like you have this wool in your eyes, it got ripped off. Then the question to me before I went was, why would the government allow these ingredients in product? I didn't have the answer. But when I went to law school, right, I understood the way, you know, the law were written, right? The law actually permits, right, these product manufacturers to use these ingredients, you know, in these products. And the legal requirement is label it, disclose what you are using, and consider them to be safe until harm is determined. Harm is determined in the user. So literally, the user became the guinea pig for these chemicals.
Wow.
Yes. That is the way US law is written. So when I understood that, you know, the reason why consumers, well, the reason why brands, you know, were using this, you know, harmful ingredients is because the law allows them. Mm. Yes, the law allows them to use it.
And puts the burden back on the consumer,
yes,
to prove the impact of the ingredients,
yes,
on their personal life.
Can you imagine that? How can you prove that?
You can,
you
unless
can't.
You have some form of evidence that says you've used it and these are the ingredients that were in that product.
But legally, that's not even enough, right? Not trying to go into law, but there's something called, you know, proximate cause, right? What that really means is, if you have this issue and you say this is it, it's what causes it, you have to prove it. You have to show that this thing, right, is, you know, is a exactly. You must, you know, it's called causation, right? It's called this caused this.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot prove it, guess what? You know, you don't have any legal standing.
Mm.
That is why you cannot sue them.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
You cannot sue, for example, Johnson & Johnson for putting on, well, not though, you can sue them through a different part of the law, right? Because they knowingly used, you know, talc powder, in this case, that is contaminated with asbestos, that their own science proved, right, to increase risk for ovarian cancer. That is why they're liable right now. But if you cannot prove that, or you have that data that they knew that this causes problem in the future, they knew that and they started to using it. But there are so many chemicals that you cannot prove. But, you know, scientifically, we have the data that it causes it. So we said, okay, let's do something, you know, different. So we created this Redify technology, Redify app, that literally, you know, loads all these, you know, chemicals, ingredients that they use in products, that all you have to do now, right, is just have that technology. You scan a product barcode, and you know it will literally check the, you know, the ingredient in that product, compare it with what is in our own platform, and tells you, you know, how many of it is bad.
That's fantastic. So if the consumer can't afford to sue, they can at least avoid the chemicals,
yes,
that are harmful to them,
yes,
prior to your product. they didn't have a way to do that. They're in the grocery store. They're looking at two products. One has a green label. One does not have a green label. They're assuming the green label product is a good product because green is supposed to be healthy.
Exactly.
That was about the extent to which they could make a judgment until Redify.
Exactly.
So Redify, you've loaded in these potentially dangerous chemicals into your database.
Correct.
And when I scan a product, you let me know if any of these dangerous chemicals are in the ingredients of that product.
You explained it as simple as it can get, exactly. So you do not have to be reading in a product label anymore. You know, you don't have to be a scientist, you don't have to be a chemist, toxicologist, you know, whatever, doctor, to say, let me spend 10 minutes read like my wife does, right? My wife will go to the store to buy two things, but she's reading and Googling, you know, the ingredients. No more, you know? So now she goes to the store, says, okay, let's, you know, Redify it. She goes, read the label, you know, go, okay, I don't want this, you know, what alternative? She gets that, you know, so, you know, it's an empowerment, actually.
So you take it a step further. You give me a green light, yellow light, red light on the product to see if it contains any of these chemicals. And if it does, you give me an alternative, a better alternative.
Correct.
That the consumer can then,
you know, you go, and again, that is the beauty of our technology. You know, our most other platforms similar to us, they only tell you this is bad, but they don't tell you what is the alternative. So that is what we're doing. We tell you, you know, that something is potentially bad. You click alternative, it gives you similar products, you know, that does not contain any toxic ingredient in this case. Mm. And then you can either buy it online or you look for the stores around you. The app will tell you the stores within you there that, you know, that has it. You know, so that's what we're doing.
That's excellent. Yeah. That is absolutely excellent to give the consumer that sort of option to find a better product, because there are so many. Peanut butter, where you will have a list of products you love, scan it with the Redify app, and realize I shouldn't be eating that product.
Correct.
But now because I love peanut butter, I'm going to see alternatives that are just as good, but are healthier because those ingredients aren't in it.
Exactly. But there's one more thing, though, which I don't think I've expressed in this program. You know, and that is, I call it the sauce, right? The what people really find more interesting. So imagine, you know, you've been using a product, you know, for a lifetime, and you scan the barcode, right? And that product has, you know, bad ingredients in it. You're gonna be angry, right? But guess what? Whenever you scan a product, and if that product has, you know, those bad ingredients, there's a green button that will light up, right? It's called the advocacy button. Once it light up, all you have to do is push it, right? It will send an email to the corporate headquarters of that brand, right? Exactly. Let them know that you are not going to buy this brand anymore because it contains XYZ. If they want you to buy it in the future, remove XYZ. That email is anonymized. It doesn't have your information on it. It just says Redify, right? But the point there is, we want to give you the power to not only make better choices, but to advocate, right, directly to the top, right, for, you know, safer ingredients.
I love that.
Yes.
I love that. Because big corporations respond to two things. Declining profits.
Yes.
Which you're going to do that.
Yes.
Because if consumers are making different choices, they're spending their dollars better.
Yes.
And they respond to advocacy.
Yes,
so
yes, yes.
So if you are empowering a consumer in both ways, push a button and send an email to the CEO, CFO, COO saying, you just lost $5. And they get 1,000 of those in a day.
Oh, they would
they
change.
Are going to look at ways of improving their products.
Exactly.
Which makes it better for all of us.
Exactly. Let me give you an example. Last year, you know, when we were still in the very early phase, in the very early iteration of the app, so the app wasn't just scanning baby product, it was scanning cosmetic as well. So literally somebody, you know, people were scanning one particular brand of cosmetic. Then they found out that cosmetic contains lead in its formulation, something for, you know, eyeshadow, whatever. So people were like pushing that button. So he went to, I won't name the name of the company, so he went to the corporate CEO, right? That consumers in Miami area were like, you know, like complaining that I'm going to buy this product. So they don't know who is, you know, sending those emails, but they knew it was coming through Redify platform. They called us, thanked us for letting them know that our product contains lead. Guess what they did? They pulled it from the shelf.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's power in motion.
Yes.
That is incredible. You
know, they pulled it from the shelf. They would not have done that if, you know, consumers, they don't directly push those buttons to send out, you know, advocacy button that they saw. They didn't tell me how many, but I think, you know, probably it's like around 200. It's like, oh my goodness, our product has lead, and they pulled it.
That is incredible. Yeah. So you got to tell us now, how much progress have you made? Because we got to get this app everywhere.
Yes. You know, we are still building the app. It's not quite stable. You know, the app has two main components. The identify part, which is where it identifies the product that has, you know, toxic ingredients, and the alternative part. So the identify part is almost ready. I would say maybe 80% ready. The part that we're still working on, which, you know, knock on wood, by God's grace, you know, maybe tomorrow we're going to fix the problem, you know, completely, is the alternative algorithm. So when you're working with vendors, you can only push them so far, right? You know, you cannot make them to do what you want to make, what you want them done, even though you are paying them. So, long story short, you know, the algorithm that is giving us the alternative is not perfect. You know, so the company that we pay money to give us perfect record, you know, it's like, oh, subscription, you know, you get, you know, what you get. So, my lawyer finally sent them an email on Tuesday to say, we're paying for this, right? We're not getting this, right? So please provide, you know, my client, you know, what they want. So that got their attention. So now they said, they promised me by tomorrow, Friday, right? You know, that the alternative will be 80, 90% better than it is today. So we're going to see. So, but if they actually fix that problem, then the platform will be at least 80% ready. And I can just, you know, do a soft launch again.
Right. Now, one of the other features of your products are alerts.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So, if you have your own personal allergies, as an example, you can go and program the app. They'll say, okay, you know, me, you know, in your case, Mark, you know, my allergies are peanuts, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, once you do that, when you scan a product that has your allergies, as an example, it will alert you that, oh, in addition to the CHC, also it has your allergies, right? And you're going to go, oh my goodness. My wife, for example, is allergic to sulfur-based drugs, right? And sulfur-based drugs are not written sulfur. It's written somehow whereby you cannot read it. So now she doesn't even she doesn't have to read, you know, those labels anymore. She scans, you know, she programs it, she scans it. If it has sulfur-based, you know, ingredient, it alerts her, you know. So, so that's again, that's one of those things that we're making sure that we're not building a technology that recognizes this global ingredient database. We're also making sure that you can personalize it to your own need.
That's terrific. To be able to configure it down to a growing list of allergies that people have today.
Indeed.
So that they can avoid that as well. This is fantastic. Now, let's shift gears and pretend like I'm an investor in the company.
Right.
What's your business model? How do you make money?
Yes, you know, three main ways. You know, the first one, of course, when you scan a product and you click the alternative button, you are going to see, you know, green alternatives, green, you know, brands as alternatives. Each time you see one of those green brands, I get paid, right? It's called in-app ads, right? So we get revenue for that. The other one is when you see those green brands, right? If you push one of them, you say you push the button, say, for example, you see, you know, say Earth Mama Baby Lotion. Yeah, it's a lotion called Earth Mama. You know, so you push one of those, one of the baby lotion button, it goes straight to Earth Mama's website, right? Mm-hmm. So that's called click-through you know, affiliate commissions. We get, you know, our commission from taking you from our platform to that website. Mm-hmm. Now, but the real value of the app is not just the advertisement and the click-through. The main value of the app is the data we're collecting about the user's shopping preferences, right? We know your likes. We know where you're using the app. We know where you're shopping. So pretty much you have a lot of interaction with the app. So from an investor's perspective, you know, you as an app user have, you know, very high lifetime value, right? So the advertisement and the click-through are like 30% of, you know, the revenue. The real value of the app, right, is in you, the user, because we've gotten all this information about you, which is how Facebook works, right? You know, you're using Facebook, you're interacting with Facebook, but they're collecting all this information about the way you use the platform, right? And they can share it with brands, you know, that you are, that you like, right? So that is the main value of the app.
Right, and I love that, because in your example earlier, if you show that users prefer certain types of clean products, that is part of the R&D that's going to help companies get better.
Correct.
So that's great data. Yes. That's terrific data. Are there any competitors?
Yes. You know, excellent question. They have that is more web based, right? Whereby, you know, they have this platform, you know, which is nice. You know, you go down there, you say, okay, I want to buy Johnson & Johnson, you know, actually they do cosmetics, not baby product. So they focus mainly on cosmetic. Say, for example, you want to buy some kind of an eyeshadow or something, I don't know much about women product, right? You say, this is my brand, this is what I'm using. They will give you alternative, right? But it's mainly, you know, on makeup, things like that. You know, makeup and personal care product. But their platform is mainly web-based, and they have their own product that they push. So their platform is meant to sell products, right? Not to inform you per se, right? So those are the closest competition. But the biggest players in this space are not for profit. So there's a company called Environmental Working Group. They have an app called the Healthy Living, and the app does the identification part. You can scan a product and it will tell you if it has, you know, they call it hazardous, you know, chemicals, but it doesn't give you alternative. Now, they are, you know, but this company is not for profit, right? They are strictly advocacy organizations. Mm. So they want you to use their technology to know products that have, you know, hazardous, you know, ingredients. And then you go and send an email to them and they forward the email to Congress. So they are based in Washington, D.C., you know, and they're pushing our senators and, you know, congressmen to, you know, change laws. Right, whereby to change the law, you know, in such a way that it protects the consumer, as opposed to protecting the brands that actually, you know, appease the politicians. But that to me, that is not a smart way, right? Because again, as we know, politicians are elected. Election takes money. The people that are giving them money to be elected are these same guys that are speaking this product. So now you're telling them to regulate people that give them money to be elected. It makes no sense. They're not going to do it. You're never going to get change. So now we are reversing it from ground up. We give, again, somebody's called our app the advocacy power. Wallet advocacy power, meaning you don't buy that product, they feel it, they change.
Right.
So that's...
I mean, you're essentially becoming the outsourced research arm for every brand that has toxic ingredients.
Yes.
Because you're
giving
them direct feedback.
Yes.
Like real-time research as it comes in from
the
consumer.
Indeed.
And as they see consumer trends changing towards healthier products, they'll know exactly where it's coming from.
Yes.
Right down to the zip code.
Yes.
That's powerful for them and you.
Indeed.
What business trend excites you right now that you think can really move your business to the forefront?
Okay. Now, I live in Miami, and to me, Miami is the ground zero of healthy living, right? You come to Miami, once you get from Miami, you get from the airport, you, other than the weather and the fact that it looks as if you're in a foreign country, look at people in Miami, right? They are super, super, super health conscious. And you, you know, watch them, watch what they consume. They don't just buy anything, right? They like to read labels. They love to read labels. And Miami is going really, really green. And they are demanding that, you know, brands are greener than it is today. So there's this gravitation, you know, towards green, you know, or they call it sustainable living, whereby you everything about you is green. You know, and Miami is very, very big in it. And also, you can see it, you know, if you look around carefully, whereby there's this drive into more organic-like lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, you eat in Whole Food, you eat in like farmers market or things like that. You don't just go down anywhere and eat, because now people are conscious about what they consume. So to me, you know, that's good, because I live in Miami and my girls are there now. And for me, that's a huge opportunity. So if you can actually give them the tools, right, to not read labels anymore, to just scan it, right? For us, that's a you know, a potential windfall, mm-hmm. right?
Do you fear like an Amazon or a Walmart co-opting your idea and making it part of their online platform?
No, let me tell you why. Walmart and all these guys, they are, yes, they do have their own brand, right? But at the end of the day, they sell other people's brand, mm-hmm. right? They don't really police, you know, the formulation of other people's brand. They don't even make their own brand, mm-hmm. right? All they care is, let me sell. So if they want to co-opt, right, what are they going to do? Are they going to, like, make sure now that every single brand that comes into the shelf, you know, is green? They're not going to want to go that route, mm-hmm. right? So, but what I think, you know, someone like Amazon might want to partner with me to say, okay, we do have this brand, this green catalog, right? Use your platform to bring consumers to my green catalog, right? So I see them doing things like that, but I don't see them, you know, because again, it's a conflict. Why would you make an app, you know, that discriminate against one product, you know, versus the other one in your own shelf? Mm-hmm. But they want someone, a third party, to do that, mm-hmm. right? It's okay, you know, you stay on your side, just bring people to buy my brand. But if they give you that app, if I'm just like Johnson, I'll be angry. Like, wait a minute, mm-hmm. why are you developing a technology to benefit him and not me? Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's go back in time and think about everything you've done to build the business. What's been the hardest aspect of launching that business?
Human beings, people, my co-founders, to be specific.
Oh.
Yes, my co-founders, to be specific. Hey, guys, I love you guys. Co-founders, you know, just in case you hear this, it's coming out of love, right? But my co-founders, again, when you have people with different vision, right? You know, you want to go this way because you think, and they say to you, oh no, you are from the academic circle. We've been in this space. We want to go this way. But from common sense perspective, that way make no sense, mm-hmm. right? So you see there's a little friction. But one thing though about the way I set up my company, at the end of the day, right, I am, compared to them, I'm the ultimate decider, right? So what has been happening now is I don't want to rule like a dictator, so to speak. I let it, you know, make a case to me why doing it this way is better. And at times, you know, go to that, they'll just like, you know, let's, like, I'll give you an example. When it was myself and somebody else that's supposed to be here right now, and they told me
at the Atlanta farm. Boomtown Farm.
Yes.
In Atlanta, Georgia.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And when we discussed it, they agreed that they're going to be here with me. So when we discussed everything and we said, you know, there's no money. I mean, mm-hmm. it's how much is it? Very little. And that, you know, we all literally have to bear some cost, mm-hmm. right? They agreed. He agreed. And 2 weeks before we came, they put back. Exactly. And I was like, oh my goodness, you can do that. We've already accepted that. We've interviewed everything. We said, we're coming. You can't just pull off, right? So now the question is, how do you, you know, fix this quickly, right? Because again, I knew for sure I'm coming down here, right? So it's like, okay, what do I do? I consulted with the firm and I said, okay, you know, we don't care who else you bring here as long as it's two people, right? And so we went looking for somebody else that lives in Atlanta, right? And literally, we went to Georgia Tech because we heard that Georgia Tech has coding boot camp. We went to Georgia Tech, literally, to like, we went to the computer department to say, we're looking for, you know, interns, you know, for the from your coding boot camp. And they said, we don't have interns here. So long story short, you know, 2 days, I think the program started on a Monday. I actually secured, you know, the guy that's Miles, you know, here on a Saturday. I met Miles this on Monday.
2 days before the accelerator kicked off.
Yes, that's right. That's why I secured him. But the point is, you know, had I not been able to secure Miles or be that dynamic, to, you know, I would have pulled off, you know, and that would have been so horrible for, you know, for the company. Because it's like this guy, you know, again, my co-founder wanted to, like, again, we are almost like a three-legged stool, wanted to remove one, knowing that the table would collapse. But that would never happen. This is my baby. Mm-hmm. You know, so guys, I'm just, you're going to hear this, or if you hear this, this is what happened. You guys know that. But I love you guys.
Yeah, but that's an important discussion that every entrepreneur and founder should hear.
Yeah.
That it's great to have co-founders, but you got to be able to manage the conflicts.
Yes.
You have to have a leadership structure.
Oh, yeah.
And a way to make decisions at the end of the day.
Yes.
So that the company can move forward.
Indeed.
Even if everybody doesn't agree,
yes,
you got to have a way to move forward.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's real life, guys.
Yeah.
Everybody that's listening to the podcast, that's real life. And some of those decisions, when made, as Dr. Okur was just outlining, could pull one of the legs off the table.
Yes, yes,
yes. And disturb the balance of the business and stop you before you ever get a chance to create any real value.
And you cannot let that happen.
Right.
If you really believe in your company, you believe in your product, you believe, you know, you have this dream, and you have a mission, you can never allow anything, not even your very close friends that happen to be your co-founders, you know, want to distort, you know, your dream. You cannot give them that power, you know. Again, I don't think he meant to do that deliberately. He was making decisions that suited him. You know, which I can understand, mm-hmm. You know, but his decision that suited him was not good for the company. And I am the face of the company. You know, it's my company, right? I'm the founder, CEO, I own majority of the shares. So it's like, you got to figure out how to do this. So I fixed it.
Now, when you first launched, you won a pitch contest in Miami.
Oh, yeah.
And immediately you got...
Yes.
Many, many hundreds of downloads.
Indeed.
Out of that, I think you say you determined that women are the primary target market
within
that group. If you could go back to that point or prior to that point and relaunch Redify, what would you do different?
I would be more serious. I will relaunch Redify, but I will be more serious with talking to investors. Because at that time, when we won, and you know, we saw that women really were engaged, especially mothers, right? Because we pitched it, you know, as an application to help mothers. Because that's why my wife wanted me to pitch it. Because that's how she uses it. So, and my wife is smart. You know, she says, you know, pitch it towards moms. And we did that, and literally we got mom to respond. So when we were responding, and we won that competition, when we won it, you know, this company that came second, right? They don't even have half the vote we have. So in other words, we had over twice as much as they do. And we got a little press. So we got some investors, you know, coming to say, hey, let's talk. You know, and at that time, frankly, you know, my hands were just too full with academic stuff, you know, and I had a lot of commitment. I was like, not now. So I delayed it, and those investors dried out. The interest dried out. So it was late last year when my wife said, you know, my wife is very practical. She says, if you retire today, how much money are you going to have to live off? Mm-hmm. Because again, I have a dream to buy a boat. Yes, I'm not materialistic, but I live in Miami. In Miami, I have a boat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so I said, you know, I'm going to, like, you cannot buy a boat with, you know, your 401k. This is it. You got twin girls. You know, you say that you're going to give them the best wedding present and to start them off in life. You're not going to do it with your salary from academics. That's what is paying you, right? Nobody can pay you to be rich, she always says. So, you know, no, literally bring down your workload, spend more time on Redify, and I will pick up the slack, right? So right now, she's busting her butt, my tail, pick up my slack to give me the opportunity to do Redify here in the boomtown.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to meet her.
Yes. That is...
That's another incredible story. Yeah. I stress this with entrepreneurs. I stress this in the book Gorillapreneur, that you have to have a plan when you have a startup. And that plan has to include everybody in your life.
Yeah.
And I give a lot of tips to entrepreneurs on how to make your money go a lot further. So you promise, a lot of you who listen to the podcast know about that, because I use that whenever I make a business purchase. And then they take 5% of everything I spend and put it in a 529 account for my kids' education. So it lets me be a startup entrepreneur while still satisfying those home requirements.
You got to take care of home.
But you have a full infrastructure underneath you with a wife who says she'll pick up the slack, knowing that real wealth is built in businesses, not in salaries.
Not in salary.
So that's an incredible testimonial.
It is. And if there's one thing, I will slow down and say this again, you know, to be clear. Nobody can pay you enough for what you are worth. Nobody can pay you to be rich. Nobody can pay you to be wealthy. They will only pay you enough for you to pay off your bills. But you cannot pass on wealth, true salary, right, to your children and your children's children. It is impossible. They will only pay you enough for you to take care of your bills today. But say for you to actually have real wealth that you can pass on through generations, you know, nobody will pay you to do that. So if you want to live real wealth and real impact, right, you better go do your own thing, right, and then apply yourself, right, to get yourself to a point whereby you can live things, you know, not only for your children, but for your grandchildren, things like that. Look at those big names. You know, for example, like Dow Corning, that is somebody. Ford, that is somebody. Right? These are not just companies that fell from heaven. These are people that built wealth. They built a company that gave them legacy wealth. Right? Again, I understand, you know, you don't leave your kids too much money. I understand that. But those wealth is not only for your family. It's actually for you to change your community. Was it Jay-Z that says, you know, what good is it for you to be rich and your friends are broke?
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you are wealthy, it's like when they say, a boat, in a big boat lifts up everything. Exactly. When you can make an impact, right, you impact everything around you.
That's right.
But you cannot do that through salary.
That's right.
Guaranteed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Business wealth raises the tide, and that tide raises all boats.
Indeed.
You can't do that with a salary.
Indeed. You can't. Absolutely.
So let's talk about how we get you where you need to be. You've gotten several thousand downloads of the... Of Redify.
Right.
And now it's time to get more.
Yes.
And we want everybody in the listening audience to go into the show notes and find the link for Redify when this goes live. Click on that link and download the app.
Indeed.
Now, it's just on iOS, right?
Yes, unfortunately.
But keep checking back. Sign up on the website. And as soon as the Android is available, download it. Because you've heard everything you can do with this app. If you got allergies, this needs to be the number one app on your phone. You got small kids and you're a mom, this needs to be the number one app on your phone. If you're a runner or an athlete and you want to put the best food in your body, this needs to be the app, number one app on your phone. So there are a lot of you out there that need to be downloading this app right now. Redify, R-E-D-I-F-Y, is what you type in to the app store to find it and download it. I got it on my phone. You should have it on yours. And let's get it and become an advocate. Click that button and let the companies know that you aren't going to buy garbage anymore.
Correct.
Let them know you want a healthy alternative, because by doing that, you're going to change your community and change your world.
Indeed.
Dr. O'Call, sir, this has been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
And I have completely enjoyed it. I hope everybody out there on Periscope enjoyed it, and I hope everyone in the listening audience enjoyed it. Please make sure you get to the website, go through the show notes, and Dr. Okoro, tell us how we can find you, tell us the website, and any other social media where the listening audience can learn more about the company.
Yes. So you can go to our website. It's Redify Inc. REDIFYINC, RedifyInc.com. From there, you can actually download the app. Or you can follow me on my Twitter. It's Victor Oko, VictorOkoh 1313. Or you can follow me on my LinkedIn page, which is Victor Oko. So the Instagram is not up yet, but that should be up, probably by Friday. So, but the best way to get to actually, know more about us is through the website, Redify Inc., REDIFYINC, and please download the app and, and have fun with it. I promise you, you're going to, it will bring some value, to your choices.
Sir, thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Guys, I told you that was going to be a great podcast. Victor gave you some great information about how to avoid CHCs and take better care of yourself, but he also gave you an inside view into how difficult it is to get a startup off the ground. Just getting the founders on the same page so you can take full advantage of opportunities like participating in an accelerator. This stuff's not easy. If it was, everybody would be doing it. And if you did it like me, you'd be a gorillapreneur. That's why you're listening to this podcast, and that's why this podcast is only for business mavericks. Guys, if you like what you hear, if you like Gorillapreneur, you may also like some of my other podcasts, Career Coaching X's and O's. That's career advice for executives seeking the corner office. You might not be ready to leave corporate America, but that doesn't mean you can't win the game. That's the podcast for you. Gigging, everything in the sharing economy. If you want to stay up on news and predictions about the sharing economy, that's the podcast for you. You can find both of those on Speaker, iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, or any of your other favorite podcast platforms. I'll put links to those in the show notes. Guys, one more thing before we get out of here. I'm teaming up with Airbnb Open Homes, a program that enables community members to offer free temporary housing for people displaced by disasters. And guys, I don't have to tell you about the number of disasters we've seen this year. So now is a time where we have to make sure that every resident has a safe place to stay. If you are able to offer free temporary housing for neighbors impacted by a disaster, sign up to be an Open Homes host by going to airbnb.com/mpeterson. That's airbnb.com/M PETERSON. You'll only be contacted when there is a need. Guys, this will be a great tool in our community's disaster recovery toolbox. Gorillapreneur, Scott Sullivan said it best in episode 7, be a mace, sharpen those spikes, and remember, if you're not breaking something, your company might be the next thing that gets broken.
Thank you for listening to the Gorillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy the book Gorillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow Mark Peterson on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Gorillapreneur. Now I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first, then seek to win. Keep fighting, Gorillapreneurs!
Hey you, podcast listener, this is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. take the blue pill, you wake up in your bed and go back to listening to mundane podcasts that won't challenge your religious beliefs and your so-called truths about reality, the universe, and consciousness. Take the red pill, subscribe to the Event Horizon podcast, hosted by Mark Anthony Peterson, and he will show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Event Horizon takes a walk into the paranormal with a splash of conspiracy. It's the podcast that would be born if David Icke and the X-Files had a baby. Subscribe to the Event Horizon podcast by Mark Anthony Peterson on Spreaker, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Stitcher, or any of your other favorite podcast platforms. Remember, all we are offering is the truth, nothing more.